Yes, Alfred?
To the bat phone, sir.
Atomic batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
It's Batman!
Greetings, everyone, and welcome to episode 89 of Batmania 66. Today's episode is called Black Widow Strikes Again. Joining us, as almost always, of course, is Holly.
Hi.
And I'm Ben, and today we have J. Elvis Weinstein. Almost did that wrong. J. Elvis Weinstein of many different things, but originally Tom Servo on Mystery Science Theater 3000 for the KTMA year, and the first year on the Comedy Channel. Josh, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
And Josh, as our guest, you have the honor, duty, and responsibility of letting us know who our villain is and what kind of the base outline of their villainous plot was.
Our guest villain, or villainess in this case, would be the Black Widow, played by, as credited, Miss Tallulah Bankhead.
I noted that myself.
Just, I'm sure, out of just, you know, respect for her grand dame. And she played the Black Widow, whose nefarious plot is disabling the brain of bank officers and fairly politely asking them to give her a bunch of money.
Yep. We came across those points as well. She's very polite about it.
Absolutely. It's not a dramatic robbery, as is befitting for someone who's about to die from emphysema within a year.
I did note that later in the episode, her voice and Burgess Meredith's voice really become kind of interchangeable.
Yeah, it's not pretty. It's not Tallulah at her strongest. Let's
no.
say.
No. I mean, they could have just shown her going to the bank and cashing this check.
They could have. Drama-wise, it's equal footing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And so, how much more do we need to know here?
No, I think that's pretty good.
Okay.
So we start in a groovy day in Gotham City.
I dug that so much.
There's nothing better than old white people trying to be hip, no matter what the era is.
Right.
And there's a lot of it. I mean, there's
being one myself, I shouldn't really cast aspersions. So.
But you know what the thing is, though, that I think the problem with this is that they're kind of winking at the culture while still trying to be part of it.
Right.
So it's very much, hello, young person, let's speak in your language.
Yeah, it's all, I mean, this series was always walking on the edge of irony.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In this episode, it was just, it was all, everything about this episode was lazy, I have to say.
Well, we're getting into the end of the second season, which is kind of when they start running out of popularity.
Right.
And we're almost to the point, there's an episode in season 3 that I can't wait to get to, where one of the villains turns everybody, the hench people and Batman and Robin, invisible. So the whole onomatopoeia fight takes place on an empty set with just the words popping up.
Wow, that is some cost-saving fun.
Yeah, oh yeah. So We're getting to that point where they're just sort of like, all right, the wave is crashing. Let's see how much longer we can ride it out.
Well, you can feel the budget trickling out. All right, even in this episode, when you see like the bank vault door is just a regular door, you know, that's sort of dressed with a vault wheel on it. They don't even go for the big door.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and you can definitely tell because there was some stuff even earlier on this season where they had a pyrotechnics budget. And they had some like real set pieces, and this is less so.
I mean, when was the last time we saw a smoke bomb or confetti? It's been a while.
That's true. However, the labeling budget remains in full effect.
Absolutely. That's the cheapest thing the art department can bring to the table.
But our episode begins on a groovy day in Gotham, and we see Black Widow pull up in her, I'm going to say, pretty awesome motorcycle with a neat little sidecar.
She is in the sidecar, which...
Yes.
Per Garden State means you're that person's bitch. So I wish she had been driving the motorcycle personally.
Well,
but
yeah, I'm always down for the villain being kind of hands-on. Egghead actually throws punches. Yeah. Like, those kind of villains are my favorite. But yeah, she walks.
She's a widow. She's a widow, for God's sake. I mean, she's not. She's, you know, that's her. She's going into the bank playing the innocent widow. She can't be an alpha.
I suppose that's true. So the first thing I really noticed after the widow cycle was that I really liked the light blue pants that Tarantula, who has yet to be named, was wearing.
You did ask me about those.
Like, I specifically was like, are those jeans or are those just really nice blue pants? So apparently
they
that's...
all wore the same pants. Yes. Too. And then I noticed everybody's pants for the rest of the episode, so thanks for that.
You're welcome. I put that germ in your brain. And then she introduces herself to the bank teller as Mrs. Black, widow.
Right, comma, widow.
Comma, widow. And I have to question, because I thought that was an alias. Absolutely 100% beginning of the episode, so I thought that was an alias. Turns out that's her real name. She actually is the widow of a man named Mrs. Black.
Mr.
Black.
Yeah.
And
So she says. I mean, yeah. I guess if she had to present identification, yes.
You know, they let Batman run for mayor without presenting identification, so... Widow. Yeah. Yes, the bank teller, yes, assumes her name is Widow, which is...
Can I see the death certificate, please?
Right.
He did not hear the comma.
He did not.
No.
He was too busy chewing scenery.
Yes.
He was.
Well, you know what?
He was intense.
By the end of this episode, I thought that particular bank teller was playing it down a little bit, so...
What do you mean? Yeah. He wasn't sitting somewhere with a gun pointed at an employee?
Yeah, bank security in Gotham leaves much to be desired.
No, wasn't that the one security guard?
No, there was one security guard, but he was in a warehouse. It wasn't a bank.
Oh, okay. Sorry, past episodes.
So she uses her cerebral short circuit box, which
is labeled.
Is a labeled, but also is a pretty neat gadget to have around. I could go for that.
That is the creepiest thing you've ever said.
But wait, okay, this is another one of those moments, though, where the villain's gadget, had it just been patented and put on the market, would have made them infinitely more money than they would have gotten from any kind of heist.
This is true, but the paperwork is a bitch.
You know what? Being less in the creative process than you are, Josh, I would assume you know much more about the paperwork of getting things copyrighted and certified and everything else.
Property nightmare makes it easier to just rob a bank.
That's a really good point.
For $20,000 in small unmarked bills at a time.
That's right.
You know, if she had just done one bank and then gone to a different town,
yeah,
she probably would have been fine.
Oh yeah, she could have been halfway across the country and you know, rich as all get out.
Yeah.
We find out.
Or just scrambled the alphabet as she went.
You know what?
No.
Look, she's getting on in years. It's harder to keep track of things. This was just an easier way to go.
I think that's also sort of part of the supervillain ethos is you have to leave a trip, you know, you have to have a pattern established because, you know, that's what makes for a grand plot.
And I suppose because none of the crimes that she pulls are particularly spider related, I suppose it makes sense that she had to have some other kind of gimmick going along with it.
Right. But they're leaning way more on the actual widow more than the Black Widow.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Until the end of the episode. But again, we're getting ahead of ourselves. But I don't know. It just seems a little too OCD for supervillainy. I think she would have been...
I see. Here's where my brain goes. I thought it more like serial killer status.
Oh, okay.
Where it's like a compulsion and like she's got a theme to keep the chaos in order.
Oh, maybe.
Right. I think that's part of evil in general is you need some order to your chaos. Exactly.
I mean, it's lazy order for chaos, but whatever.
Sure.
You know what?
It's phone book.
She ripped that page out of the yellow pages, has a pen, highlighted, check marks, great.
But come on, guys. Every one of us has created a plan that turns out to be way too complicated to follow. This is a good plan in that sense. It's very easy to keep track.
I frankly have never made a plan in my life.
Oh, well, fair enough.
I've never finished one.
You should start robbing banks in alphabetical order. Wait, okay, what happens if there's a bank? Like, there's not a bank that fits. Like, she was doing Gotham National at one point in the episode. What if there's no H bank?
I think there probably is. I think you have to stay in alphabetical order. I would worry more about numerical First National Bank sort of things, because she already usually those happen before the alphabet.
Except for in iTunes. In iTunes, they put the number stuff last, which
there you go.
Bugs the heck out of me.
There's your answer.
What?
I don't know.
Holly's giving
me... Just the things that bother you weird me out sometimes.
Look, that's my super villainy. You have to put the numbers before the alphabet.
That's I'm sorry, but I have to tell you that you've already started by having a podcast poking holes in Batman. So, you know.
You know what? And we've failed for 88 episodes because there are no holes in this show. It is 100%
solid.
Thought out. But we get out, and that's when she names the hench person as Tarantula, her first hench person. Mm-hmm. We also find out when we cut to Commissioner Gordon's office that the bank teller's name is Cash.
Wait, Ben, why did I write sexism?
Oh, we haven't gotten there yet. That's Aunt Harriet. We find out that the bank teller's name is Cash.
Uh-huh.
And that just, that bothered me. I know it's the whole MO of this show is being on the nose and corny, but it bugged the heck out of me.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, obviously they thought it was clever.
Yeah, but I mean, going back to them getting lazy, even when they think they're being clever, they're just being really lazy. So this is when they the police once
again... By the way, this episode was written by the show's post-production coordinator.
Oh, I didn't even notice that. That's...
Yes, Robert Mintz was the. I had to look up a couple things about this episode. So,
do you think it was just at the point where it's like we've done 90 of these? Hey, Bob, do you want to write a show?
Maybe, you know, it might have been like I'll only come back if you give me a script this year. It might have been one of those things.
But I will say that I don't know about Holly, but I got more notes on this episode than I have in a while.
Yeah,
like there was a lot to sink into, even though it wasn't the most clever or most enthusiastically acted episode we've seen.
The whole thing has the air of a high school play, honestly.
Yeah.
Yes.
And honest to God, this is the only version of Batman I was ever in my life a true fan of. Now, granted, it was as a child, but nonetheless, I actually have affinity for this version of Batman. But this episode was like... almost like a high school play in its amateurishness.
Oh yeah, well, and
most episodes are though.
I don't think that's true necessarily.
I think the episode
when you have like villains who are acting the part rather than trying to
not that's true. I would never say that about a Riddler episode.
And that's the thing is that this whole show, you know, sinks or swims on the strength of how much fun and passion the villain brings into it.
So, and like, she literally had her oxygen tank just off camera for this episode.
Yeah. Well, and there is a reason that they used to have backup Penguin scripts just on hand for any time Burgess Meredith said he was willing to come on the show.
Right. And I think that's how Robert Mintz, the post-production coordinator, got a script assignment, because they overwrote just to have things in the hopper, you know?
Oh yeah. Well, there are certain episodes where I have questioned whether or not this was an auxiliary Penguin script that just
we've done that with both. What was it? Wasn't there a Puzzler?
Yeah. Oh, there was like, an episode
this
for
is a Riddler script.
Yeah, a random villain called the Puzzler, which you know has never been seen again since. And it was like, oh yeah, this is because they were fighting with Frank Gorshin over money. But right. We're in Commissioner Gordon's office. And they're talking with the bank teller. And the police once again proudly espouse their incompetence and that they need to call Batman, who Cash refers to as being part of the dynamic duet. And both Gordon and O'Hara correct him.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right. This was Because
it's that far off.
Well, also, maybe this was me reading... you know, 89 episodes of subtext into it. But I thought the dynamic duet made them sound a little bit romantic, and maybe that's why they took offense? I don't know.
I didn't think anything
okay.
of it.
Okay, yeah, so maybe I'm just reading way too much into it.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. It just didn't play as well. I think what it was just a lame joke.
And that maybe it was me just trying to latch on to something that made more sense.
Like, Patty said something farther off, like the dynamic duvet or something like that. Then maybe, but
I have a dynamic duvet. I had it custom printed.
Duet and duo are synonyms.
Yes,
that's the thing.
This was a classic case of it was Commissioner Gordon's villain, not O'Hara's villain.
Oh, yes.
They just start talking about it so vaguely, it could be anyone until it's named.
We've developed our own axiom, which is O'Hara's villain. There are plenty of episodes, like Schrodinger's cat, because there are plenty of episodes where the initial crime is so vague and nonspecific that when we get to Commissioner Gordon's office, O'Hara will say, it must be, and then it'll be whatever this week's villain is, with no real connection.
Yeah, it's like, well, right. It could only be, you're not, you don't mean.
Yeah, so in this case, this was Commissioner Gordon's villain, where somebody robs a bank by hypnotizing or manipulating a bank teller, and Gordon goes, ah, yes, I remember, don't you, O'Hara? This is the first time she's ever appeared on the show. Mm-hmm. Nobody watching would have any opportunity to remember, because we've never seen this modus operandi before, which the show does a lot.
Right. But the only crime that takes place in Gotham City is that of supervillains. So.
Right. Which the police immediately then shunt off to Batman and Robin, which makes us wonder why we have a police force in Gotham at all.
Well, the why? If she didn't, she did not appear before.
No, this is her first appearance.
But this is nonetheless called Strikes Again.
Yes, and also Commissioner Gordon remembers her striking before. Yes.
Okay. So they're like tricking the odd. They're trying to literally trick, because I think the audience liked returning villains on this show, obviously.
Well, the reason...
But maybe they're trying to trick the audience into thinking she's a returning villain.
Well, it's partly that. It's partly because everything was built for syndication, so that the idea being that if she ever came back again, they could just show it in any order and it wouldn't matter.
Okay.
But also, the episodes, for the most part, are rhyming couplet names. So this one is The Black Widow Strikes Again. The next episode is Caught in the Spider's Den. So the reason it's The Black Widow Strikes Again is because they need something to rhyme with den.
Gotcha.
So this is when we cut to...
We haven't gotten Stately to the Wayne opening
Manor.
Credit
I know.
Yet.
Well, there's a lot to digest in this episode. We get to Stately Wayne Manor, and this is where Aunt Harriet is trying on a pair of black trousers, because she's going mod. And this is where Holly wrote sexism.
Just that whole scene.
Yeah, the whole scene is about how ridiculous it is that Aunt Harriet wants to wear pants.
It's just kind of scoffed at.
And then there's a joke about her wanting a mini skirt.
Oh, that's what it was.
And I don't have the... Well, she said I didn't have the face for it?
Yeah.
Right.
Because, haha, she is old and not attractive. Right. Haha. Which, I don't know. I'm fine with those kind of jokes, but again, it just was poorly done. And I didn't catch what name did Alfred just call Commissioner Gordon? Commish Gordon?
It was Gordon Commissioner is on the phone.
Thank you. I knew he tried to mix it up in some way that didn't work at all.
Right.
But Alfred is the king of the loudest stage whisperer in the world, so it doesn't surprise me that this wouldn't work either. And Commissioner Gordon says to Batman over the Batphone, "You'll never guess who it is." And Bruce then proceeds to guess Penguin. Mr. Freeze, whatever. And I just wrote, stop guessing. Just let him tell you.
Right.
Clearly, you're ruining Commissioner Gordon's surprise. He wants to be the one to tell you. Let him tell you.
So they Batman, it's no one nearly as good as that.
Right. Right.
We
lower.
Didn't have the budget for that.
Lower. Not quite the puzzler.
Right.
We then finally get into the Batcave and the credits. This is where I noted that she is, yes, special guest villainess, Miss Tallulah Bankhead.
So good.
Yeah.
And we're in Commissioner Gordon's office, and he's explaining that she uses hypnosis, drugs, and other artificial means to manipulate people. And that's when Batman pulls out a hairdryer, which is such a cheap, lazy prop that they had to have Chief O'Hara call it out so that people wouldn't just go, that's a hairdryer. But it is actually...
Hairdryer, Batman.
It is actually a... Sorry, brainwave bat analyzer.
Oh! I was writing notes at this time, and I just realized what we're talking about. Like the head hair dryer, yeah. Not like a hair dryer gun.
Right.
Got it. Sorry. Caught yeah. up.
It's a sit-down hair dryer.
I don't know why I missed that. It's so hardcore.
They put bank teller cash into it and find out that his cerebrum was short-circuited.
By the way, in Cash's defense, I think he's an account manager.
Okay, sorry. Account manager. I wouldn't want to downgrade...
What'd you say you
were? A bank teller.
Oh, no, he's definitely in charge of something.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry, Cash family, if you're listening.
He might even be a branch manager.
I assumed he was a branch manager.
I like the idea that if I keep calling him the wrong thing, you guys are just going to promote him to board of director by the time we're done.
I just think that if you're going to nitpick across the board.
Fair enough. Fair. All right. Point to Josh. Batman then finishes with the analyzer, and he's clearly enjoying himself because the bat junk is super prominent in this scene. We've noticed that there's something about Commissioner Gordon's office that Batman seems to like because bat junk is everywhere in Commissioner Gordon's office.
This was a junk-heavy episode.
Yes. Josh, just so you know, bat junk and robin eggs are reoccurring themes in pretty much all 90 episodes we've watched so far.
Yeah, I've pretty much put together what that means. So
yeah. Well, you're a pretty smart guy. I'm sure you were paying attention to that and only that the entire episode.
I was. My head was sort of.
Batman then branch manager Cash very, very reasonably asks about long-term effects. Batman glibly tells him to take 2 aspirin and get some sleep.
Well, he says, I think he said cold tablets.
He did say cold tablets.
Did he? Yeah. I thought he said aspirin. Okay.
That's not a thing now.
All right.
I made note of it as well.
We then find out, we cut to Black Widow in her underground grotto, which is classy sounding. Like, I want a grotto. It's not a lair. It's not a dilapidated building. It's an underground grotto.
But a suburban underground grotto.
Well, you know, it's expensive to live underground in the city.
I guess so. So you know it's not a sewer, is how.
Yes.
Well, have we seen her drive into the secret door of the suburban home yet?
No, not yet.
Okay, sorry.
But...
Spoiler alert!
Alright, everybody, if you listen to that last part, forget it. You don't know that yet.
No, I'm stuck on all the cords.
So, we see one of her henchmen come in through a door that is labeled trapdoor in the wall.
Okay, so I immediately started criticizing that one. Labeled trapdoor, and then...
Yes, and then we find out that it is both the henchmen and the entrance that are trapdoor.
No.
Yes, his name is Trapdoor.
Yes.
His name is Trapdoor, and that's his cubby.
Yeah, exactly. That's the entrance.
Because they couldn't use GIMP in 1967. Exactly.
But no, it's only for him. That's not the entrance to the entire lair. That's his cubby in the lair.
That's his address.
You know, like Harry Potter is...
Trapdoor, underground Gatto, suburban Gotham.
Yeah.
All right, makes sense to me. We then find out, so we have Tarantula, we have Trapdoor, and then we find out in this scene that the other henchman's name is Daddy Longlegs.
Yeah.
That dude won.
Oh, yeah.
Of the henchman name lottery, that guy won.
He was also the tallest and most attractive of the henchmen.
Well, that's how he got that name. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, Batman and Robin are trying to figure out what Black Widow's next move might be.
By the way, they could have called Trapdoor Brown Recluse, and it would have worked.
Oh, yeah. But they wouldn't have got to label a trapdoor.
It's true.
Do you think somebody in the prop department labeled that without asking, and they had to change the script just to fix it? Like, it wouldn't make sense to label a trapdoor. That must be the guy's name. Call him Trapdoor.
Because yeah, I don't think anyone really was objecting to any random labeling in this series.
But I don't know... How,
I think it was yes and to all of the things.
Do you think, because trapdoor isn't like a spider thing to me, is it? Oh, trapdoor spider. Is that is a spider. Okay.
It's an Australian
okay.
spider.
That I didn't know.
But. There you go.
Oh, well, I am a spider expert, so.
Are you?
No.
Mostly she's a spider phobic.
But my father used to make me watch the Discovery Channel, so I know a lot about spiders.
There you go. And had it been the History Channel, you would have known a lot about Hitler.
I don't.
You're arachno knowledgeable.
Yes. She's not an expert.
That reminded you of Batman Turn Off the Dark just now, didn't it?
You mean Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark?
That's what I meant.
Yes.
Batman, sorry.
Holly and I had the pleasure of seeing Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark on Broadway.
Ouch. I mean, oh, cool.
You know what? Holly had never been to New York before, and we saw two shows in two nights. The first night we saw Book of Mormon.
Nice, which I saw as well.
Yeah, we ended up, fourth row center or something? Third row center. Which I did not know when I bought the tickets because I just clicked best available. So when we got there, we just kept walking down further and further towards the stage. And I'm like, what is happening here? But then the next night we saw Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
AKA Spider-Man Turn On the Lights.
Yes. And I will tell you that as fun as Book of Mormon was and as well put together as it was, Holly and I got way more giggle mileage out of Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark for the rest of our trip to New York.
Right. Because it's a B musical.
Oh yeah, it was. Oh, if we could have had robots with us to heckle, it would have made life better.
I think. Although, sorry, this will be the last sidebar for this time. The look on your face when the guy two rows ahead of us leaned over and said, "This is pretty good," really loud, and your eyes almost fell out of your head.
Yeah,
made me really happy.
Yeah.
Honestly, I know, however, Book of Mormon is one of the best things ever done.
Oh my God.
It's amazing.
I mean, we did the Broadway, like, full pendulum swing, like, the absolute best thing playing, and then the absolute worst the next night.
And we got very lucky, because we saw it right before Josh Gad and the other guy.
Don't point at me like I know people's names.
Left the show, so we got to see them.
The original cast.
With the original leads, we got to see it right before they left.
I paid a ridiculously too big of money to see that when we were actually in town doing Cinematic Titanic on Broadway as well.
Oh.
And I went in early to see it.
Yeah, I paid a ridiculous amount of money, but I just, you know, it was, you know, normal Broadway ticket price. It wasn't like I scalped it and just bought tickets 6 months out and went, "Hey, Holly, what are you doing 6 months from now?" And so the two of us spent a week in New York.
That was so fun.
Yep. Getting back to Gotham.
What?
I'm
still talking about this shit.
Batman and Robin are in the Batcave trying to analyze what Black Widow's next move might be. And they're explaining that Robin is being impatient, and Batman explains that it's analyzing over 3,000 cards. Right. Which meant that just before that scene, there was an epic adventure scene of Batman and Robin feeding 3,000 punch cards into a computer.
You know damn good and well.
They made Alfred do it.
Alfred did that.
They made him go back through the servant's entrance. Holly has a huge problem that Alfred doesn't have his own pole for the Batcave.
I just mostly have a problem that they labeled the entrance the only he uses, the servant's entrance.
He has a service elevator.
But they labeled it servant's entrance.
He's Alfred the Butler. They use Butler in his name.
Such a bummer.
Wait, you think his name is Alfred T. Butler?
Yes.
Then we cut back to...
Robin says about the gears.
Oh,
Maybe the gears...
No, we cut to actually... Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
No, they mentioned that her name is Black. And that the computer's fixated on it. And then that's when Robin says, maybe the computer's needs oiling. I'm like, that's computers? No. That would be bad.
Don't do that. Please don't oil the computer.
I said that's not how analyzing works.
Right. This is when Batman and Commissioner Gordon are on the phone. Batman's explained they haven't figured out what she's going to do next. And he says, I'm almost tempted to let her. And that's when he figures it out.
Letter.
Yes, I'm almost tempted to letter. And he goes, wait a minute, letter. Read me the names back of all the banks she's robbed, and that's when we find out she's going in alphabetical order.
What do we call this, Ben? Leaps and bounds.
No, you know what? This one, though, I would say...
No.
Okay, I would say you were right if they had named the banks beforehand, before that scene... Then it wouldn't have been leaps and bounds. But it's leaps and bounds because we didn't know the names of all the banks yet. So we didn't have the information as the audience to figure it out.
Ben's defending this show.
Yeah, I'm all... a little bit of background. I'm the fan of this show. Holly had never really watched before the podcast started.
I'm not a fan. You've Stockholm syndromed me into liking this.
I did not tell her until we were recording the first episode that there were 120 episodes of this show.
Okay.
So she has now been forced into liking it because I make her sit down and watch at least one episode every week.
Whatever keeps fire in your relationship is good.
Yeah. Also, Holly having a boyfriend keeps fire in our relationship.
Yeah.
So Batman tells the police to sit on their tuffets.
Solid. I like that joke. I was really happy with that.
And they go and stake out the Gotham Central Bank. Is that the one?
I didn't write down.
But it's the Gotham something bank because she's onto G in her alphabetizing.
All right.
And that's when we get our cameo, which is pretty cool because it's Telly Savalas as Kojak.
No, it's not.
It's not? It's not Telly Savalas?
It is not. It's George Raft.
George Raft. Oh, okay. The other one.
It is George Raft, which, through a couple of different, is a weird and bizarre reference because Tallulah Bankhead had an emergency hysterectomy 30 years earlier due to venereal disease, which she credited to George Raft.
Oh, that's gross.
Please tell me you didn't research this and this is just things you know.
No, this is something that just two separate pieces of research made me put together.
That's wow. Fascinating. All right.
Because I saw one thing about her emergency hysterectomy. That was on Wikipedia. And which she credited to George Raft.
Wowzers.
And then I had to look this up, who that actually was in that cameo, and it was George Raft.
I told you Telly Savalas was thinner than that.
But he was wearing the same trench coat and hat. That's what confused me. All right.
He also had hair. That might have sent you in the wrong.
Yeah, I thought that too.
Yeah.
I just take Ben for his word. I just trust whatever. Him. Whatever. Stop doing that.
I always assumed, it's this show, I always assumed it was a wig. But...
And Kojak was 10 years later.
Good point. I mean, Telly Savalas was still Telly Savalas, but yeah, Kojak was later than that. It was
the 70s. He was like in the Dirty Dozen by that point, but he wasn't in Kojak yet.
Oh, well. I biffed that one, everybody. My bad.
All right. I'm just happy to know something.
I don't edit this podcast. So yeah, we get our cameo, and then... The bank manager's name is Leghorn, which I latched onto because they used it several times as though it were something important.
He was also labeled.
Was he?
His desk was.
Oh, okay, there you go. I just noted that he is a danger to himself and others.
Okay. Real talk.
He's the one with the gun?
The one with the gun, who's pointed as employee and then is just shaking terribly the entire time.
My exact note is this. That guy didn't react to his boss holding a gun at him. What's happening at this bank?
Do you think that's just normal?
I think it might be.
He was also sitting. He had also, for some reason, taken all the money out of the vault, and was sitting in front of bags of money,
with the door open,
with the gun,
and the door open
again. They didn't pay for a vault door.
Yeah,
it was just him in front of several piles of dollar bill labeled money bags.
Right. Well, because the best way to protect that is with a firearm that can only shoot one at a time.
All right.
And with a clearly untrained, shaky bank manager.
Untrained actor as well.
You don't know. Hey, community theater is a beautiful thing.
He was acting scared.
Yes.
Acting.
This is when they say Batman tells him to play it cool, and if a woman shows up with a large handbag and asks to open an account, just play it cool and let things go.
Savings account.
A woman comes in to shot, which is clearly not the Black Widow, because they focus on the handbag, which is not her handbag with the Black Widow mark on it.
Hourglass.
So we know that it's not the Black Widow. The bank manager, she comes in, she asks to start a small savings account, and the bank manager jumps on her and says, "We got you, Black Widow." To which Batman and Robin run up, and Aunt Harriet explains she's just trying to open a small savings account for her nephew. You know, that young man, right there standing 2 feet from me. Right. You know, the kid in the domino mask, who I clearly can't recognize. Do you think Aunt Harriet is face blind? That's the only thing that makes sense to me.
She did not look at them at all.
All right.
She's not. Also, she's an idiot.
Well, because women are the absolute worst.
In her defense, she's an idiot.
She's an idiot. You know why? Because she's a woman.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Women are the worst.
Tell me anything. Women are the absolute worst.
At least she wasn't wearing the miniskirt.
If they're not just being stupid, they're manipulating you. Or being manipulated.
Well, look at all the women villains. Catwoman, Poison Ivy, Homewrecker. Okay, there wasn't a Homewrecker.
But I wouldn't be shocked.
I thought you were calling Poison Ivy a homewrecker, and I was just valid.
She's getting in between.
But now, Josh, when the three of us get together to write our Batman comic, we are introducing the homewrecker.
There you go.
So my note on this is, oh shit, Aunt Harriet's pissed.
Yeah, oh, she was very pissed, and she was gonna take her money back to one of the banks that had already been robbed, which honestly is a pretty solid idea because. Probably nobody's going to go back and rob the bank again.
Right. It's like keeping your cop on the barn door since the door's open and then shut.
Yeah. Yeah. So you, the barn door opens and all the cows escape, and then you take your own cow and you put it in the now empty barn and then shut the door again, and you're safe.
Exactly.
Even though the first farmer's already lost all their cows.
Right.
It's a perfect metaphor.
I'm going to smile and nod right now.
So Batman and Robin, when in like 5 seconds later, the real Black Widow shows up. Batman and Robin jump out, and she tries to use her Cerebrum short circuit box on them. But they have prepared with their anti-short circuiting brain bat electrodes.
Which required no prop.
Right. Well, they're built into the cowl and the domino mask.
Right.
I think it's hairpiece.
Oh, gotcha. No, it's codpiece. They're built into the codpiece. Because they're electrodes. There's no reason they have to be connected to the brain. They could be connected anywhere. She then uses her instant nerve paralyzer gas. Is that what it was? Nerve paralyzer spray?
She uses bug spray on him? Yeah.
Yeah. But only on Batman.
No, she used it on both. He actually Robin did such a terrible job of freezing and acting that it only seemed as if she used it on Batman.
Okay, yeah, because he just
says, let's go get him. Though.
Yeah, he wasn't.
Because they said, because it wears off.
Oh. Yeah, but it wore off way slower on Bruce than it did on Dick.
It was like he'd been to the dentist for his whole body.
Yes. And he was over enunciating everything.
Yeah.
When he explains that it was...
he should not have been driving.
Yeah, oh yeah. He was... my note for that was, I drive better when I have a few, because he was clearly, like, walking out, stumbling to the car. And that's when Dick should have just said, you know what? Give me your keys. You need to sleep this off before we're going to drive anywhere. This is when I missed what they called... Oh, they have an odor sensitometer that is following the exhaust from Black Widow's bicycle or motorcycle.
Motorbike, yes.
And they drive up to a suburban house with an old couple sitting on the porch rocking back and forth. And we find out that Black Widow is watching them from her grotto with a periscope. And the old couple speaks... through her, she tells them what to say, and then they say it in a rather stilted and stiff voice. And
they are actual puppets.
Yes, they're dummies.
They aren't actors that she's relaying message to. They are actually automatronic puppets.
Oh yeah, but I mean the voice she's using, because she's just speaking into a microphone.
Right.
She is over enunciating and talking in a semi robotic voice.
By saying that she tells them what to say implies that they have some decision making in.
Okay. Okay.
To
yes.
Say,
I apologize. Yes, they are puppets. They are not.
They're puppets.
Yes, they are auto animatronic, but they have no autonomy of their own.
They're
I apologize.
Mr. Lincoln.
And only he's more believable. Mm.
He has less shiny makeup on.
And as the robots talk to Batman and Robin.
Well, every actor in this episode is like, bring your parents to work day.
Yeah, nobody's really selling it, I think, in this one, sadly. But the robots do get one line that I really quite liked, which is, as they're bidding farewell to Batman and Robin, they say, "You two are the ones who are always fighting evil, right?" And they say, "Yes." And she goes, "Good. Frank and I are both categorically against evil." I just, you know, bad things are bad.
Yeah.
So that's a bold stance to take.
Yep. Batman and Robin can't figure out how they can't find them, even though the bat oscilloscope or the bat odorscope or whatever it was, sensitometer, says they should be right there. And they drive back to the Batcave and they're analyzing a recording with a bat oscilloscope. And they figure out that these two voices were amplified human voices. They were not just people speaking. So they drive back. It is now 3 hours later, and Robin is shocked that two people could still be sitting in rocking chairs on their front porch after 3 hours. Mm-hmm. To which Batman replies, "Oh, you think they'd be off their rockers by now?" He's very proud of himself for that one. He'd been waiting for that the entire time. He was just waiting for an opportunity to use that one.
Because if they were real and they weren't on their rocking chairs at that moment, he still would have made that.
Oh, yeah. He would have gone, "Look, they're off their rockers." Mm-hmm. Yeah, of course.
It's a strong joke. It's worth stopping an episode of television.
That's right.
I'm just glad they stopped doing PSAs.
Oh, no. I'm sure they come back. I'm sure. I love the PSAs, though. This is when Batman and Robin go looking, because they realize by poking and prodding what could have been two real old people, that they are not real people. They're just puppets.
Yeah, they like honk the dude's nose and
Batman's
like sticking his finger in her eyeball. It's just not okay.
Yeah, but they're not real, so it's okay.
Yeah, but those poor actors.
But they go and they are prowling around the house. And they pull on the wall to the left side of the house, and the entire wall comes down, and it's a ramp into the grotto. And when that happened, I said to Holly, I honestly didn't expect that.
But that happened when she drove up into it.
I must have been writing a note or something, because I missed it the first time. So I was honestly pleasantly surprised by the wall coming down, and as were the East Germans. And they...
So what this proves is that looking away periodically while watching an episode of Batman can enhance your enjoyment.
Yes, yes. Not paying full attention is a good way to get surprised later on.
Apparently it's a good second screener.
So they're in the grotto.
My point on this right now is, do they have a warrant? They just get to like go into places? Like,
yeah.
Well, yeah.
Okay.
They're not real policemen, so what the hell? They're just vigilantes.
So breaking and entering, then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right.
They take the law into their own hands.
They're deputized vigilantes.
Yes. Which means they shouldn't do that, because anything they find would be thrown out. But...
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. These two are a freaking DA's nightmare.
Just ask Harvey Dent.
Aww. It doesn't really matter, because the villains always escape prison anyway.
Well, that's because, I don't think there's, that's any because court. Warden Crichton is the worst. But they go down into the grotto, and they have their
call it a basement, since that's really what it is.
I don't think Ben can.
It's just a basement. Maybe a rumpus room. It's not a grotto.
All right.
It's just a basement.
They go down into the widow rumpus room.
Okay.
And
there's something so wrong about that phrasing.
And they have the onomatopoeia fight for the episode.
There's only three onomatopoeias now that I look at it.
Yeah, and it took like a good minute for the first one to pop up.
Yeah, I'm yelling at the TV. Pow, crash, and ouch.
All of the hench people are incapacitated.
There's a bunch of them.
Yeah.
But I guess it makes sense.
They're crawling out of the woodwork.
Yeah. I'm surprised we haven't had more spider puns this episode, Ben. I think you're really slacking.
I'm sorry.
I'm disappointed.
I don't even have one to give you for that. I apologize. I'm completely falling down on the job. She called.
I think they should have won the fight with just rolled up newspapers.
Just a sneaker.
I would have liked it better if they had used the rolled up newspaper just to gently let the hench people back outside.
That would have been kinder. It would have been much kinder.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
I'm just gonna call her Tallulah, calls Batman a dynamic doll, which I really kind of liked. It was sweet.
Every time she said doll, I was thrilled.
Dynamic doll.
Yeah, exactly. There's something so charming about that to me.
It lacks a little bit in the reenactment, though.
I don't think so.
She then tells Batman that it's ironic that they're caught in her web. And yeah. I wrote down, that's not irony.
That's not how irony works. Nope.
That's right.
If you are a spider, if you are a spider-themed villain and somebody gets caught in your literal web, not ironic, expected.
It is nail on the head that you're caught in my web.
That's right. It is utterly cliche that you are caught in my web. They get caught in the web. She does tell Batman that he may be caped and dynamic, but he's a crushing bore.
She's not wrong.
No, not at all.
Says the actress who hasn't left a 2-foot radius in any performance since the beginning of the episode.
Yeah. She also then says that she and her henchmen are going to go tunnel into her vault to look at their lovely loot. Why do they have to tunnel? It's her vault. Doesn't she just know the code?
It's spider jokes.
Was it tunneling? Was it going through the tunnel to her vault?
She said they're going to tunnel into her vault.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, that implies that they actually have to break into her own vault.
It's not a good design. It's a bad design. She'll admit it.
You know, or maybe she just forgot the code.
There's just shovels sitting there, and every time they have to dig a new hole down to it.
Yeah, I think maybe it's just like when you forget your house keys and have to break a window to get in. She just doesn't know the code anymore. So every time
you said, my house the other day.
You had to break in?
Yeah.
You forgot your keys?
I locked myself out of the house when I went to take the trash out.
That's why I always bring my keys with me whenever I leave the house. Just in
here's
case.
Here's for you guys are misties, so here's a good breaking a window story. When I was 17 years old, I was living with Joel Hodgson.
Okay.
And he was out of town. And I locked the keys in the house. And so I could get into the garage, and so I got a hammer and I went to the front, to the back door, and I rapped on the window with a hammer. Bah! It didn't break. I hit it again. Bah! It didn't break. I swing it open one more time, and the woman next door opens her door and goes, "You know, I have the keys."
I like that she was giving you just enough leeway to see what would happen. Like, right. I want to see where this goes first.
This could be good.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I saved myself $100.
Yeah, I had to crawl in through the dog door. It was left.
Also something I would have liked to have watched.
It's not easy.
They
the shoulders do not permit.
But Batman and Robin are caught in Black Widow's web, and she then has her henchmen bring in her giant Halloween decorations. I mean, spiders.
Yeah.
And they are being jiggled up Batman and Robin's legs as the episode ends.
Really, I think maybe the lamest thing ever to happen in that series was that those spiders on that web.
It, you know,
it's
what?
Pretty bad.
We've seen a lot of really lame things, and that's
Did
impressively
you ever see,
bad.
Are you old enough to have seen The Electric Company as kids?
Oh, yeah. I remember it. I don't know. Holly's a couple years younger.
The Electric Company?
Vaguely.
See what
time? The Electric Company, which had Morgan Freeman reading words.
Right. No, I understand.
Yeah. But Spider-Man used to show up every once in a while.
Oh, no.
They had a regular feature called that was Spider-Man. And viewers should look it up on YouTube, Electric Company Spider-Man, just to see how lame it was. And then go back to this Batman episode and you'll go, wow, he's right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I remember enough of it to remember that, yeah, this is pretty, pretty close. But Batman and Robin are doomed to be nibbled by felt, and the episode is ending.
The poison is the implied killer here, Ben. They're Black Widows.
Oh, it's poisonous felt, is it? Is that what?
They're giant Black Widow decorations.
No, right. Sir. That's paper. They're about to be nibbled to death by felt, and that's when the episode ends on a cliffhanger. So, Josh, you'll never know if they survive.
That's right.
But I can
tune in mañana, says the announcer.
Yes, same bat time. Same
bat time.
Mañana. Yeah.
For some reason, there's no Spanish thing happening here.
The song was playing just as he went on. He was actually listening to the song Mañana right before he did the recording. And they're like, no, one take and we're done.
So when they made these shows, they did recorded the VO for both the weekly and daily syndicated version simultaneously, I assume?
I believe so, yeah. And the set has the daily. We also know for a fact that we bring this up almost every episode because it's my favorite thing now, but we know for the fact that the narrator is actually in the room with Batman and Robin, because there's a previous episode where the narrator is going on as Alfred cleans, and Alfred shuts the door to the hallway, and the narrator's voice actually gets more quiet, so he was standing in the hallway.
Right.
So we know he's just following them around just off camera the entire time.
Right. Well, I have that. I have a narrator that follows me around, too.
Well, you got to think about it. With all of the death-defying situations they get themselves into, makes the narrator kind of a sadist. Like, he just really enjoys watching them almost die.
Well, it's his gig, you know. He finally gets his chance to shine.
And he gets an envelope full of money for it.
That's right.
Oh, now you bring up the Hedge Maze of Sadness.
The Hedge Maze of Sadness.
My hypothesis for this show is that Batman and Robin are just so badly damaged by their parents' death that Alfred has orchestrated this fantasy of supervillains in Gotham for them to have something to do to make them feel useful. And he walks around after every fight and every caper just handing out envelopes full of cash.
It could be. I buy that. It actually makes it work better than the actual real-life events.
Well, it makes sense that most of the crimes that the villains commit aren't really crimes, if you look at it that way.
Right, and that he's hiring shitty actors.
Yes.
Yeah. It's what he can afford. Oh, that's right. What happened. The budget.
Alfred has squandered the Wayne fortune on supervillains.
All people that he hires out of his AA meeting.
No.
Where Alfred's central trauma is that he's forced to use the servant's entrance in this bullshit superhero thing.
That's right.
He set up this whole thing and he doesn't even get his own bat pole.
That's right. Josh, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
Now comes the ever-present and ever-wonderful plugging hour, so if there's anything that you have coming up that you want to tell our listeners about, we'd be happy to hear it.
Check out my... you can get all my info happening through my Twitter feed at J. Elvis Weinstein. I got a couple of documentaries that should be coming out this year. I'm doing stand-up at the Royal Oak Music Theater on St. Patrick's Day in Detroit, and the Vic Theater in Chicago the next two nights. So if you're in either of those, come on out.
All right, awesome. As always, you can find Holly at _awkwardblonde on her Twitter and her Instagram.
Sure.
And I have to say it because Holly never remembers. And then you can find our podcast at BetMania66 on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And if you want to send us correspondence, you can send it to batmania66mail@gmail.com or julietamor, C-O, Bono, and the Edge, @gmail.com if you want to get a hold of Holly.
Still my favorite thing I've ever done.
That one, Josh, that one comes from a running gag from an episode that never aired. I told people we were talking about the Spider-Man musical again, and I told people that they could send their hate mail for me to Julie Taymor, care of Bono and the Edge. So Holly went ahead and got that email address.
There you go.
And I'm
really proud of myself.
The next episode coming up is Caught in the Spider's Den. That's going to be episode 90. And we'll see you guys for that next time. Same bat time, same bat channel.